Good morning, and you're very welcome to Countrywide. Well, I'm standing on a 450-acre bog in Kildare, which happens to be the source of the mighty River Boyne. But we're going to keep our feet on the ground this morning, on the bog, and look at how our relationship with the bog has, in the past few years, rapidly changed from one of extraction and industrial peat production to one of creation and restoration. The landscape painter T.P. Flanagan described the bog as the fundamental Irish landscape, which has a primeval connection to those who've gone before us. For poet Seamus Heaney, our bogs are a dark casket where we found many of the clues to our past. But what of their future? Well, communities all around the country are reshaping how they interact with their local bogs, as we now all fully realise just how much they have to offer. As sponges for water and carbon, they soak up more carbon than almost any other ecosystem on Earth, and extraordinary places for life. David Attenborough calls bogs the cradles of biodiversity. And as you're going to hear, bogs are also places for people to come together. And that's particularly true of here in Carberry Bog, which the community has owned and managed for 120 years. Now, much of this raised bog is legally protected, but a section in the northwest which isn't protected has long been legally cut for turf. Today, it is a source of fuel for about 100 families. Tommy Knowles has been involved in the Carberry community group here for over 45 years. Sort of squelchy, isn't it?
It is. At this time, it doesn't feel too different from walking on a farm, but some of the time there's low spots in the bog, and the water fills into it. The turf is cut by a contractor up there at the face bank.
Do you still burn the turf?
Yes. We burn turf, yes. We have oil, but we burn turf as well. It's a kind of a tradition. It becomes a sort of a habit, I suppose, to burn turf. We have a bog committee of a number of trustees, but their approach is, and I'd be probably one of them, is that we will try to keep cutting turf here for the people who want it. The demand for turf is very slowly reducing, and hopefully, eventually, well, it'll phase itself out. I suppose we'd like to see the turf stopping as a result of people not wanting it, rather than being forced to stop cutting.
And you said the word hopefully there. Is it what you hope?
Yes, that'd be what I'd hope. There's quite a bit of virgin bog up there as well, and I would be inclined to like to see the bog being preserved, or probably re-wet it or use for environmental purposes.
It's a very distinctive quiet, isn't it, being on a bog?
Well, it is, yeah. I suppose years ago, what people used to always like on the bog is the tea. They always claim bog tea was better than any other tea. I don't know.
It's because you've earned it. Yeah.
Probably.
Now people are out on the bog, enjoying it, re-wetting it, photographing it.
That's right, yeah. I know, we were out breathing myself and my wife. We took a trip out.
Well, the legal right of the community to cut and remove turf from this part of the bog will continue. But this group is also at the forefront of shaping a new future, which involves restoration. The man at the centre of this is farmer and forester Ciarán Duggan, who's chairman of the Carberry Bog Trust.
We're now off down in probably one of the most inaccessible parts of the bog here. This part of the bog, we call it Fria. It's the town's land.
To get to a part of the Carberry Bog that was historically cut but has now been left to nature, Ciarán brought me through a 4-acre field that he bought 30 years ago, which is just on the edge of the bog.
This little field we're in, I started to rewild this back in the year 2000, when nobody even heard of rewilding. It's been left to nature effectively since.
The butterflies are everywhere.
It's for even on this evening when it's wet. And if you look across it, it's full of meadowsweet. Wonderful plant for insects and all that kind of thing. I'm not an ecologist I'm very much an amateur, but I love nature and everything to do with it. One of the other things about this field, it's half mineral soil and half peat soil, so you're on the edge here, the original edge of the bog. So if you could imagine the raised bog slowly spilling out across the mineral land, that's what you would have had here. So roughly where we're standing here would have been where the turf cutting started by hand, and it would have worked its way right in through. This is the future. I really think this nature taking back over and doing its thing is the future.
So we're walking out of the fields, the rewilded field, through a little, kind of like a little copse. Ivy underfoot, lots of dead trees, ferns everywhere.
If we keep going here, we will eventually come out to High Bog. Reindeer Lichen is just behind us here. This is the reindeer lichen.
Sort of mint colour, isn't it?
If you get me starting about lichen, lichen is a wonderful, wonderful life form. It's it's neither a plant nor fungus. It's a cooperation between both. It's magical stuff. This is the piece de la resistance. This is the magic plant.
Sphagnum.
Sphagnum, yeah. And even though that's really, really dry there, all the water that comes out of it when I squeeze it. One of the issues I see with the discussion around bog restoration is that we're all heavily influenced by our thinking around our own lifetimes. We are strongly influenced by the three generations that went before us, and we will heavily influence the three generations coming after us. Nature conservation isn't about now necessarily. It's about the future and indeed the past. But the future measured in centuries and millennia, not short human lifetime. In the last couple of generations, we have shortened that thinking to what can I make this year? And we're measured financially in quarters. We need to start spreading that out. And for bog restoration, that's what we have to think about. There's a little over 480 acres in total. There's approximately 80 acres of that has been cut over. And that has happened over the last 250 years. We still cut turf for a little over 100 local families. We cut something under half an acre per year into the remaining 400 acres.
What do you say when people say, we can't cut turf anymore? That's yesterday's business.
I largely agree. Except the cutting of turf is an important economic, cultural activity that's very rooted in our identity here around the Midlands bogs. One of the issues that is not understood, we were very lucky in Ireland back about 120 years ago, just before we got our independence. Most of the tenant farmers in Ireland got to buy out and own their own land. Some in society, agricultural labourers and stuff, lost out in that lottery at that time. And in a lot of Midland counties, those families tied to the land was manifest through their annual turf cut. And that's a strong draw. If you want people in the Midlands to, and they're usually very logical, straight talking people, if you want to get them to become illogical, talk about the bog and talk about taking them away from the bog, or the bog being taken away from them.
Because it's emotional.
Because it's emotional. The bog is part of us. You can take the man out of the bog, but you cannot take the bog out of the man.
Everything that you're saying, Ciarán, it isn't about the industrial removal of peat, is it?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's for people's own domestic use only. Since day one, when the social enterprise was set up, that has been a condition.
What do you want to happen to Carberry Bog in the future?
I'm passionate about nature, as you can probably see already. I'm passionate about people and about community. We can continue to cut turf for as long as people need to, for whatever reason. And we can also embrace conservation and indeed restoration. Bogs came of nature. We came of nature. We still are. We're all part of the same family of life. We've grown up with these bogs. We just need to make friends with them again. Yeah, the wind is dropping down now, and we had better get out of here because the midges won't be long now before they'll come out. The wind has been helping us up till now.
They'll eat us alive.
We'll be eaten alive. Yeah. And so if the bog holes don't get us, then the midges will.
Ciarán Duggan, and before him Tommy Knowles of the Carberry Bog Trust. Well, Bord na Mona, the state company originally set up in 1933 as the Turf Development Board, specialised in industrial peat harvesting until 2020, when it announced the end of all extraction on state-owned land. But the illegal commercial extraction of peat by private operators continues to be widespread, in a lucrative trade worth 40 million euro every year. Well, last month, investigators from the Environmental Protection Agency found evidence of large-scale illegal peat removal from sites in Offaly, Westmeath, Roscommon, Longford, Sligo, Tipperary and Kildare. Tom Ryan is the EPA's Director of Enforcement.
I suppose if we distinguish between domestic turf cutting, where people are exercising their lawful turfery rights, they harvest seasonally, and maybe they use operators to extract that. But that's perfectly lawful, so long as it's not on a special area of conservation. So if there's turf cutting on those habitats, then the National Parks and Wildlife Service work to transition turf cutting away from those. Where the EPA is involved then is on large-scale operations, where operations are taking place over 50 hectares. Now, these are all of the sites that we investigate are to do with peat extraction, not for fuel, but for the horticulture industry and for the mushroom industry, largely for the export market trade in those industries.
Before we get into your recent report on illegal harvesting of peat, can you give me a sense of how much legal harvesting of peat there currently is in Ireland?
The only organisation that has licences from the EPA to harvest peat is Bord na Mona, and they ceased those operations in around 2020. But those licences are still operative. And this is really important because it shows the value of regulation in this area. So once they've stopped harvesting peat, then those licences that speak to the rehabilitation of those lands, the re-wetting, the rejuvenation, the bringing back to life of those lands are now operative. And Bord na Mona are actively engaged in those rehabilitation processes. So from an EPA perspective, they're the only licences that are in place in the country.
What were you looking at in this report and how did you go about it?
What we've done is we've identified through various sources of intelligence 38 sites around the country, across seven local authority areas, actually, where peat extraction is taking place on areas greater than 30 hectares, some of it greater than 50 hectares. There are three types of extraction taking place. The first is the traditional mill peat type of extraction that people would be familiar with from Bord na Mona doing over many years, where there are drains dug, water table is lowered, and then the surface layer of peat is milled and it's dried and then it's harvested and taken away for processing. That's one type. Another type is large sod harvesting, where specialised equipment is brought in to extract very large sods. So you think a sod of turf is quite small. These are very, very large sods, and they're exported typically intact. And then there is a third type, which is probably the most destructive of all, and that is just the excavation of the site from the top down to the marl, leaving exposed marl. So you could have a whole bank of peat taken away in a single season.
And where is all this peat ending up being sold?
A lot of it is going to Northern Ireland and the UK, but it's going across Europe and across the world. The horticulture and mushroom industries, whether it's in Ireland or across Europe, are the recipients of the product. The operators that are doing it are a varied group of people, from large organisations down to local operators, predominantly Irish operators.
It does seem extraordinary that this kind of activity is continuing when it is not allowed. It is illegal, as you say, but then that the product is finding its way into the market.
This kind of activity is very damaging to the environment. It's catastrophic for the local environment. It causes the destruction of vital ecosystems for biodiversity. We're losing important carbon sinks in our fight against climate change. And, you know, we're seeing the decimation of an irreplaceable cultural and scientific amenity. That's why we are very active in the courts to stop activities within our direct enforcement remit. And that's why our expectation is of local authorities that they would prioritise their enforcement activities to hold these operators to account.
Tom Ryan of the Environmental Protection Agency. Well, while small numbers of people continue to flout the law, many more around the country are re-engaging with their local bogs. Poet Jane Clark joined a group of volunteers at her local bog in Wicklow, which is being restored. And this inspired her to write a poem called Barnacullion Bog.
A straggle of helpers, we squelch and slip in the steps of a ranger up the sodden path north of Tonlagee. Last night's deluge rushes down from the summit. Streams widen and deepen the gullies, push aside fracken, cross-leaved heath. We stretch for footholds among tussocks of sedge and ribbon grass, clamber hummock to hummock, leap across sinkholes, skirt a sheep's skeleton next to plucked feathers of falcon's prey. Up ahead, the bog's an ocean of cracked and crumbling peat. But where the south track wins the ridge, a sheep-proof fence guards growth. Wooden dams block sediment. A meadow of cotton grass dazzles. And sphagnum moss, bog builder, spreads emerald, burgundy gold.
Jane Clark reading her poem Barnacullion Bog. And the sphagnum moss that she described in that poem, it is the life force of the bog. Well, after the break, we're going to hear from more people who are helping to allow this moss to grow, spreading colours of crimson, yellow, bright green and gold all across the landscape.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.
Welcome back to Countrywide, where we're hearing about how communities are finding new ways to engage with the bog. Well, over in Ballycroy in Mayo, there's about 200 or so farm families who have the right to cut the turf for their own personal use. For those who live on legally protected nature sites, however, well, they're being financially supported to retrofit and insulate their homes so they no longer need to burn turf, something that's also beneficial for air quality. This is all part of a publicly funded Wild Atlantic Nature project, coordinated by the National Parks and Wildlife Service, which is trying to shift local engagement from extraction of turf to restoration of bogland. Well, Trasav Rannoch met farmer Gary Ginty, and Gary's family is one of the first to be involved in the scheme.
Yeah, it's a lovely spot on a good day. We're a place called Bunmore West in Ballycroy, County Mayo, right on the border of the Ballycroy National Park.
So, can you tell me where your bog is here then?
Just in front of you there, you can see there's a few sheep hanging around the edge of it. The turf bank heads off down in front of you. We would, of course, cut turf there since the early 90s. Starting off with the slane, cutting by hand, evolved into machine turf and eventually to the hopper that is the last turf that's cut on it there last year. You can just see the area ahead of you there. You take a section every year and you cut whatever amount of hops you might want. It might be 30 or 40 hops that you should get a return of 5 or 6 loads of turf. Usually 5 or 6 loads of turf would do the house for the year, you know.
Last year was the last time you cut turf here. Did you miss it this year?
You know, you wouldn't miss the work of it, I suppose, but yeah, there was always something nice about coming to the bog, you know. You would miss it in a way, like, but
you weren't missing the horse flies.
Not missing the horse flies or the midges in the evening, yeah.
There's another Gary here with me, Dr. Gary Goggins. Gary, you might tell me a little bit about the pilot programme and what exactly is involved in it.
It's a big EU-funded project coordinated by National Parks Wildlife Service, which focuses on conservation restoration of blanket bog habitats. For farmers, most of them don't have an alternative to turf for fuel, you know, so they're out cutting turf to heat their homes. So I guess the whole idea behind the project is quite simple. Participants in the project get their homes retrofitted, and in return they restore the peatlands and they agree to not cut turf. We had a lot of interest from farmers. We had over 50 expressions of interest, and Gary Breege and a couple of neighbours here have come into phase one of the pilot, where we work with 4 homes. Then when we are happy with the model, we'll scale up and we'll bring in another 16 homes into the programme.
Yeah, what's been proposed at the moment is, you know, as part of the scheme, is that we try and restore these bogs, you know. And what that means was, okay, you'll never probably get them back to their natural state, but you get them back as close as possible, where you'll, you know, you'll slip the banks of the bog and cover over the black peat with vegetation. You'll be taking probably a donor sod to vegetate it, you know. And there'll be areas where you put in maybe buns to raise the water table a little bit, so you'll encourage the sphagnum mosses to grow. And all that is to minimise the amount of carbon that's been emitted from the black bog itself, from the peat, you know. That's the whole objective of it, really, you know.
Well, Gary, maybe we'll go and see what you have planned for the house. I presume you have big plans, do you?
Yeah, we have good plans. You know, we have to get the house up to a standard. That's up to a minimum of a B2 on the scale. So that's a job of work for the designers to get it to that, you know.
Breege, we're back at the house now. Maybe you can show me what you're planning for retrofitting, but will you miss the smell of the turf fire?
We probably will, because we're used to having it, like, you know, and I suppose growing up with it from where I came from, Bangor, and we have it here in Ballycroy, it's a common thing around here. And yeah, you certainly will miss the smell of it. You certainly will, like, yeah. Mm. We'll go inside and we'll have a look and see what we're going to, the plans for the inside of the house.
The main thing that has to be done with our house here is the doors and windows. They would be, you know, 2007 model, just before the new regulations came in. Yeah, although they're double glazed, they wouldn't be greatly insulated, you know. So there's a bit of work to it. The other thing then, I suppose, here is our primary heat source at the moment is solid fuel. Although it's a back boiler, we have underfloor heating in the house. That's one thing we did right when we built it. We put in underfloor heating. So at the moment, the back boiler is circulating hot water. We do top it up then for the winter time with oil. That's what we have been doing. So that system now is going to go, because we can't have turf burning. So we'll be putting in a heat pump. Mm. So you might ask then, is your electricity bills not going to go up? The answer is yes. So again, to mitigate that and to reduce that, we're going to put in an array of solar panels, and they will provide energy back into the grid and clock up credits for us with our ESB supplier. So it will greatly reduce the cost of electricity at the end of the day. Your bill will be greatly reduced across the year, you know. It's a win-win situation for both the environment and for the homeowner, like, you know.
Do you have much turf left this year?
Yeah, we have.
From last year?
We have turf outside in a stack here, and we have some in the shed for easy access on a wet day. There's the house here. So we'd only have maybe a half a load of turf left altogether now outside. And we'd probably have a load and a half in the shed.
Do you feel nostalgic at all? Or are you thinking about the legacy you're going to be leaving future generations?
This is our opportunity to adapt for climate change, you know. And, you know, I'd be happy to see this happening here. And even from the physical aspects of going to the bog, as good as it was, you know, there's bad backs, there's sore hips, and there's everything else out of it too. My kids won't have to do that. They'll have a different view, I suppose. But at the same time, I suppose, I want some recognition of that culture left, of how we were brought up. Even with all this restored, and I think it's important that some of the bogs are left just to keep our history there as well.
Gary Ginty talking to Trasa Vranach. Well, back in the Midlands, people, young and old, are sharing their own stories about the bog. And for some, it's changing how they think about the bog. But for others, it is a new relationship as they learn about what the bogs have to offer. Toher Community Voices is a storytelling initiative which is part of the Toher Midlands Wetlands Restoration Project.
Oh, row the Rathlin bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, row the Rathlin bog, the bog down in the valley.
We went down to the bog that's near our school and we were learning all about the flowers and the insects that live in the bog.
I saw the bog asphodel, ling heather, bog rosemary, sphagnum moss, cross-leaved heather, beak sedge, feather moss, cross-leaved heath, lichen, bog cotton, Scots pine and deer sedge. It was very interesting. It's a very nice place to be. It's very relaxing. Just kind of puts me in a good mood for the rest of the day.
I saw new plants that I've never seen before, like the bog asphodel, sundew, reindeer lichen, devil's matchstick.
Did you find devil's matchstick?
Yeah.
Good girl, that's brilliant, excellent. I'm just going to mention this because it's important. That area has been restored. So what you have to do, you have to re-wet the bog. In other words, you have to stop the water leaving the bog. And the way they've done that, it's a system called cell bunding, which keeps the water on the bog. And that was done just last summer. It's been hugely successful.
I drew a butterwort. We learned that about how old the bog was and how they can preserve loads of things, and I find that very interesting. The bog is 10,000 years old.
Take your time.
My name is Laura Lynch and I'm the fourth class teacher here in St Anne's Turles Pass. The children got so much out of it, even the visit to the bog, it really engaged them and that was fantastic for them. I know Eugene for years and how passionate he was about it, and that this generation will look after the boardwalk in Turles Pass. They'll be protectors for the future.
Down in the valley, oh, for all the rattling bog, down in the valley, oh.
Well done.
The children of fourth class in St Anne's Tyrrells Pass in County Westmeath, with Eugene Dunbar, a local bog custodian. Local artist Alison McAvoy and her daughter Annie doing what thousands of other people do each year. Going for a walk through Abbey Leek's bog in Leash.
We have a dipping pond here where lots of samples can be taken, or the bog education crew can show children what's actually living on the bog, that it's not just something to look at. There's actually plenty of life here as well.
A spider.
See, like a spider, but spiders can't swim.
Yeah.
It is a bog whose fate could have been death, were it not for the actions of the local community. Well, today it is 500 acres of life within walking distance of the town, a free space for everyone to enjoy.
It's just like a different world out here. It's so far from the road that you can just kind of disappear out here. If you're here on a quieter day, you don't bump into anybody. You can just do your walk. If you want to chat, you can, or you can just sit down on a bench and just look up at the sky, listen to the birds. It looks like a rainforest from where we are. All the ferns and the high trees. It's just a little escape. And for, I suppose, a lot of people would take time for a little escape now and then from the humdrum of normal life.
Abbey Leek's bog has been hailed as an example of community-centred restoration. Part of it is 250 acres of partially drained raised bog, which had been harvested in the 19th century for fuel. But since the community took it over from Bord na Mona in 2009, their work has helped to reduce carbon emissions. They've allowed life to come back, and it's now home to a range of rare species. And in the main, this is all done by volunteers. The chairperson of the Abbey Leek's Bog project is Gary Luttrell.
The project itself is restoring the bog. So now, instead of a drying out bog, a bewildered bog, It's now a living bog. So the bog is actually back living. The high bog is growing again. That increase in active raised bog from when we took it over in 2009 to 2020, we had seen an increase of something like 1,200% in the active raised bog. And if you look across there, Ellie, you can see all the white, the bog cotton.
You can see the bog cotton. It's beautiful.
The bog cotton, we sort of missed a lot of it there. And there's a couple of other areas. And that tells us that that bog is living again. Yeah. We're now actually sucking in carbon as well. And that's the real benefit.
And we're just passing a jogger now. Morning. There's orchids everywhere along the side of the path.
That's right, actually. There are orchids
phenomenal.
Here. And this is a special area here. This is what we call a scallops area, right? These orchids coming along. You have the devil's biscibius. I'll show whether it's out now or not. That's the food for the marsh fritillary butterfly, which is again is one of the ones that we see here.
It's not often that you come to somewhere which has such amenity value, which has also things like devil's biscibius and orchids, and obviously all the insects they attract.
That's exactly it. But I think we've something like 25 of the 34 species of butterfly that are you can see here on the bog throughout the year.
The land here was owned by the Deveshi family, who gave permission to locals to cut turf around the banks on the edge of the bog. The centre bit was left intact, a dome of peat which formed a raised bog. By the 1960s, Susan Deveshi realised the extraordinary nature value of the bog, and she wanted it to be preserved. But in the late 1980s, Bord na Mona, who said that the bog had no special or scientific interest, wanted to buy it to harvest peat and sell it for horticulture. Tom Deveshi, Susan's son, lives nearby.
My mother died way too young in the early 80s, and Bord na Mona kept on coming to me. My father had died shortly earlier, to acquire this bog. And my mother's values were firmly instilled in me, and I wasn't interested in selling it, even though I was desperate for money to pay the taxes on my father having died. There was a purchasing officer for Bord na Mona, and he basically said, I want this bog for Bord na Mona. And
you knew what that meant was the bog was going to be cut.
Yes, it would have been milled for peat, the same as the most of the bogs between Aveleeks and Portlaoise, which removes all the plant life and wildlife, and they drain the bog.
And you said no, no, no.
I said no, 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 and a perfectly nice man, but he had a job of work to do. And he would come back every few months say he'd get the same answer from me. And finally he came in and he said, look, and I've had a compulsory purchase order authorised for the bog, which will come into effect next month. But you can sell it voluntarily this month and we'll give you a few euros more. But be very clear about this. You're going to lose that bog within a month and there's no way out of that. I sought legal advice and there's nothing you could do about it.
And Tom, when he said that to you, can you remember that afternoon, that evening and how you felt?
Oh, I was devastated. You know, I kind of lost the battle to keep the bog and I knew what would happen, that it would be drained and then goodbye plants, goodbye animals, goodbye wildlife. At that stage, nobody really understood its importance as a carbon sink and really essential to slow down climate change. I went down statistically as a voluntary sale, but it wasn't voluntary at all. I was heartbroken. I mean, partly personally and partly I thought that it was sort of, wasn't quite a betrayal of my mother, but she hadn't died very much earlier than that, and I knew that she'd be in tears. So I kind of lost the battle, it was heartbreaking. But then, as you may be aware, I hadn't realised the strength of feeling amongst my friends and neighbours, because they also loved the bog in Aveleeks.
And so the bog was then in the hands of Bord na Mona. Parts of the bog were then drained to dry it out in preparation for harvesting. And then one Friday morning in July in the year 2000, the diggers moved in. But the local community stepped up and said no. Early the next Monday morning,
37 local people, including farmers, teachers and local gun club members, gathered at the entrance of the bog. They came from all walks of life, but they had one united message. The bog is not for harvesting.
Adrian Eames, 20 minutes to 9. Residents of Abbey Leaks in County Laois are angry at plans by Bord na Mona to dig for peat at a bog on the outskirts of the town. They say the bog is a nature reserve and a recreational area. They say the state body must apply for planning permission before proceeding. But Bord na Mona says the bog is not of ecological or scientific significance, and they say it's therefore exempt from planning requirements.
Talking to Morning Ireland at the time, two people from the group, Gary O'Keefe and Chris Hutchinson, explained why they decided to take action.
That's right. Now, our understanding is that there wouldn't have been any development without community consultation. That was on a Thursday. On Friday morning, machines moved in and there was a lot of community concern and anger over this. So the reaction from the community was to actually put in another obstacle in retaliation, if you like.
And what was that?
That was a 20-ton crane. There wasn't any work done on that Friday or Saturday or Sunday or Monday, for that matter.
Yes, it's a beautiful natural forest. It has evolved over maybe a couple of hundred years, and it would be an awful pity to have it destroyed by machines. And their intention, I think, is to level the whole lot and harvest the peat from the entire bog.
This natural immunity will be gone. You'll have a big brown scar. We don't know what effect it'll have on the environment, on the hydrology. It certainly leaves a hole in the ground, which some residents, rightly or wrongly, have concerns about, that it might make an ideal site for a landfill.
Thanks to the locals, the bog was on its way to being saved. Well, three people who were part of the group back then are local farmer Dick Wellwood, Jacinta Martin and retired local principal Michael Martin. And they remember well that morning 26 years ago.
Well, I suppose it all came from different angles. Like, we live quite near, so does Dick. Dick lives on the down beyond the bog there, and we live on the other side. And, like, we were living nearby. We were concerned, naturally, about the ramifications of development of the bog.
There was a small group formed just before this episode, and we got absolutely nowhere. We were given the runaround. And then when the machine went into the bog, word went around, and the next thing, this tractor was heard that this tractor was coming. Some of the lads brought the crane down and blocked its entrance. It was basically a PR disaster for Bord na Mona, because they couldn't shift, they couldn't get it in, and they'd have to pull it away to get it out.
And I can see you're laughing there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think we were helped as well, because some of the younger group there, I wouldn't have classified myself as the younger group that time, they were sort of militant, if you know what I mean. They were up in arms about it, and they enthused the local people about it. And then we just turned up. Not in my doorstep would we have a development like that.
And Jacinta, how do you remember word got around? Because, you know, I mean, there were mobile phones in the year 2000, but they weren't as common as they are today.
Yes, I think it was word of mouth.
It was.
You know, the people came around and said, "Will you come to the bog on such a morning, 24th of July," which we all did. And that's how it's happened.
Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I came at it from an environmental point, because at that stage I was farming organically. I also had land adjoining the bog at the far end of it, and I often used to walk the railway line at the time. That was one of my main interests in that.
Yeah. And was it good fun?
That's a great fun. It was a great day, yeah. Well, I suppose I was a local school principal here as well, I suppose I saw the damage, maybe from an environmental point of view, but also from the enjoyment of kids in the bog. So that's the reason we went.
Do you remember the moment when Bord na Mona came and they realised, who are these people? What's going to happen here?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were all milling around, and the next thing, it was decided we needed to take a photograph. Bord na Mona workers arrived just before that. We wouldn't let them drive the tractor away. A couple of their bosses came, more or less said, "Listen, you have to move." And we said no. So then higher up bosses arranged meetings and whatever. we just kept saying no.
You were saying no to the Bord na Mona workers coming in. But at some stage, you all had to go home to bed, I presume. Oh, yeah. Like, were you concerned the next day that they were just going to do the same thing?
Yes, we were, because we didn't know whether they'd come when we were not there. But luckily enough, they didn't turn up.
Yeah. There was a sense of militancy about us. So I remember the Bord na Mona, they were saying, like, I mean, the guards will be here shortly, you know. And we were simply saying, we don't care. You know, we are, you're not going in.
It's ours.
It's ours, correct, yeah. We were kind of on call, even though we didn't have texts or anything else, but we all had our own little network built up, you know. And so we were on call and we were ready to stand in the barn, the bale at any stage.
Physically, they couldn't get in because the crane was in the way. They could not get past the crane.
Who had the keys to the crane?
Nobody knew.
Was it you?
No, I didn't have the keys of the crane, but I have no idea who had the keys of the crane either.
I do, but yeah.
Oh, you're not going to tell?
No.
No. Yeah.
And we formed
area.
Yeah. Area, it was called Area, yeah. Which stands for Abileek's Residence for Environmental Action. So it did mean action.
Yeah, it did, actually meant action. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What then happened in the years following? I mean, what was your ask of Bord na Mona?
The bog. They offered us a corner of the bog on the high bog, and it was mainly an area where their machines couldn't turn. They couldn't harvest it. And then they offered us a degraded part of the bog on the left. We said no, that all or nothing.
You were asking for the 500 acres in total?
Yes, all or nothing. Eventually, attitudes changed. Basically, they said, yeah, it's far better now to be more of an environmentally friendly company than what we were.
How long did it take them to make that decision?
2008, 2009.
It was 9 years.
Was it when we signed, yeah, eventually, yeah. So to be 8 or 9 years, yes.
Mm. Did it split the community? Did people come up to you and say, what in God's name are you at? Will you stop doing this? Or did you generally get support?
I can honestly say that it brought the community together.
Yes.
We came out of it united, enthusiastic and willing to do anything to stop Bord na Mona with their plans.
How disparate was the group? I mean, there's 37 of you there. We're looking at the photograph again.
Counselors.
So in terms of, were you politically united? Did you all come from the same perspective? What did you agree on apart from saving the bog?
We didn't have anything else to agree.
To do with politics.
It was nothing to do with politics, yeah. The group that came together, first of all, had nothing to do with politics.
We wouldn't have known a lot of the people. We would know, you know, personally.
That's correct, yeah.
But in the end, we're all friends and we're still our friends. But unfortunately, a lot are deceased.
Lot are dead. It's important to realise, though, that that group, they had no personal vested interest.
No.
None of us had a personal vested interest in stopping, shall we say, the development.
It was the public interest.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the whole impetus to the idea.
Are you proud of yourselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I remember I used to travel up and down the country back in the day, and people would ask me, where are you from? And I'd say, Abileek's. Now I meet people at different parts of the country and they say, oh, Abileek's Bog, which is fantastic.
That is very, very true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. A greater community in the locality. And now we're associated with our bog and having a cup of coffee here in Polly's, bring your kids around for a weekend, walk around the bog, enjoy yourself. That's what we're remembered for. There's a tourism industry almost built up from it as well as the environmental impact it had in the town.
If you hadn't have done that, what would we be looking at now?
Brown desert. Simple. They had the machines ready to go and it would have been harvested. That's it.
What lesson is there for the rest of us?
I suppose the biggest lesson is stick-at-itness. Like, I mean, initially when we stood there, I know we are full of the joys that day and full of enthusiasm, but that doesn't get anywhere. I mean, it, as we said early on, it took 8 years before release could be signed. Sure.
But that was the start, not the end.
Despite
big time.
Step backs and forward and backwards and forwards and backwards, stick at it and stay together.
In 2009, the community signed a 50-year lease with Bord na Mona. Today,
80,000 people a year walk through Abbeyleix's bog. And according to the UN, it is a remarkable model for sustainable restoration, an example to communities worldwide. And it's all down to the actions of these 37 people that morning in July in the year 2000.
The goal was to stop the development and stop maybe and keep the bog for ourselves. But there was a sense of achievement. Look what we have achieved. You know, it's like winning or learned.
Yeah, just because you're from Kerry.
Is it?
That's right,
Phil. I'm half a Kerry man now, but
I just threw that in, sorry.
And that was a Countrywide team production. The music you heard there at the end was called Knockatallan Jig in celebration of a bog in County Monaghan, and it was arranged by Michael Gallen.